He called it a special project. Those were his exact words, a special project, with a gravity in his voice that was meant to convey both trust and urgency. The title on the email was Operational Transition Initiative, Confidential. My name was on the distribution list alongside his and two others from the finance department whose functional roles I didn't fully understand until 3 months after I'd signed everything they put in front of me. My name was on the documents. That's the part that took me the longest to absorb. Not that I'd been deceived. I understood that relatively quickly, in the way that you understand something that you've been performing willful ignorance about, and then can no longer maintain. The part that took time was the simple administrative fact. My name, my title, my signature, on invoices that I had processed without a full understanding of what I was processing, in an amount totaling approximately $2,300,000. I'm going to back up and tell you who I was before March, because it matters. My name is Vivienne. I had been with the company for 7 years. I came in as a project coordinator, built my way up to senior operations manager, and by the time Marcus, my direct supervisor, and I thought my advocate, called me into his office on a Wednesday in January to tell me about the special project. I was the person in the building that people brought things to when things needed to actually happen. Not the person whose name went on press releases. Not the person in the meeting room when the executive team took photos for the annual report. The person who made the things in the annual report actually occur. There's a whole category of person like me in corporate life, and the function we serve is invaluable and structurally invisible, and that invisibility is the precise mechanism that was used against me. Marcus had been talking about promoting me for 18 months before January. Not vaguely, specifically. VP of Operational Strategy was the title he'd used in at least 4 conversations, and I had documented 2 of them in my personal notes, and he had referenced it in my last performance review in the language that HR uses when there's a real pipeline intention behind the language. I believed it because Marcus was not a person who said things without backing them up. He was methodical and deliberate, and he had a reputation in the organization for building teams rather than harvesting them. He had promoted 2 people from his division in the previous 3 years. He had promoted them exactly as he'd said he would. I was going to be the 3rd. The special project was a vendor payment streamlining initiative, as he described it in January. The company was transitioning several large vendor relationships to a new payment processing structure, and there was a confidentiality requirement during the transition period because of competitive sensitivities. My role would be to review and approve invoices from the transitioning vendors and facilitate the payment scheduling through the new system that the finance team was implementing. Marcus would be copied on everything. The process was being coordinated by someone at the executive level whose name I didn't need to know for my purposes. I would have signatory authority on the invoices because the executive level coordination required someone with operational context who could verify that the services reflected in the invoices matched actual deliveries. That someone was me. I asked about the vendors. He gave me a list of 3. 2 of them I recognized. They had long-standing relationships with the company that I had managed aspects of in my operational role. The 3rd was one I hadn't dealt with directly, but recognized from internal communications. I asked if there was documentation of the service deliveries I would be verifying. He said the service delivery confirmation process was part of the new system, and the IT team would orient me on how to access it. Someone from IT did, in fact, send me an access link within 2 days. The system showed service delivery confirmations alongside each invoice. The confirmations looked exactly like what a service delivery confirmation should look like. I approved 4 invoices in February, 3 invoices in March. The investigator from the company's legal department came to my office on the 7th of April. She did not knock. The door was open. She walked in with a folder and closed the door behind her, and in the 30 seconds between when she sat down and when she told me why she was there, I understood, in the specific way that the body understands things before the mind articulates them, that something serious had happened. The third vendor on Marcus's list did not exist. The company name was registered as an LLC in a state with limited disclosure requirements. The registered agent was a name that no one at the company recognized. The service delivery confirmations in the IT system had been generated by a module that a former IT contractor, someone who no longer worked at the company, had built into the system during a period when they had elevated access. The confirmations were authentic-looking documents that referenced real service categories with real-sounding descriptions. They had been paired with the invoices specifically for the approval queue where my name appeared. 7 invoices, $2,300,000. My name and my title and my signature on every one. Marcus was not in the building. He had not been in the building since the 6th of April. He had taken personal leave, approved, properly documented, through the normal HR process that had begun, as I was now learning, 48 hours before the company's financial audit cycle was scheduled to begin. The audit that would have caught the vendor discrepancy. The audit that did catch it, one cycle earlier than scheduled, because one of the finance team members, Marcus, had included in the special project distribution list, had forwarded an invoice to a colleague with a question about payment timing, and that colleague had asked a question that escalated. I did not know Marcus had done this. I want to be absolutely clear about that, because there will be a version of this story told by people whose professional and financial interests are served by my culpability, and that version will suggest that my 7 weeks of invoice approvals constitute knowing participation. The version of events that I know to be true is that I was the person in the building who made things actually happen. I was 7 years into a career built on operational trust, and I was shown a system that appeared credible, assigned a task that appeared legitimate, and positioned as a knowledgeable operational reviewer in a process whose actual purpose I could not see. The company placed me on administrative leave the same afternoon the investigator visited my office. My badge was deactivated that evening. My work laptop was collected. I received a letter from outside counsel within 48 hours that was simultaneously a notification of investigation and a preservation hold on my communications, and that contained language about the scope of my exposure that I cannot fully discuss because the matter is ongoing. My personal attorney, who I retained within 24 hours at a cost I had not planned for, is experienced in exactly this category of case. She told me something in our first meeting that I have returned to constantly in the 4 months since, that the sophistication of the mechanism matters, legally and factually, and that what was constructed around me was sophisticated. The IT module, the vendor registration, the distribution list that included finance team members as apparent witnesses to the process's legitimacy, the timing of the leave relative to the audit cycle. These are not the errors of a careless person. They are the architecture of someone who had thought very carefully about where the weight would fall. The weight was designed to fall on me. I was the name on the documents. I was the signature. I was the person who had been told consistently for 18 months that a VP promotion was coming, and who had, because of that consistency and that trust, processed 7 invoices through a system I had been given access to by someone I believed was positioning me for advancement. The promotion was the thing that made it work. Not just because it was leverage, the promise of something I wanted badly enough to take on a special project without asking questions I would otherwise have asked, but because the promotion, if it had been real, would have required exactly the kind of expanded operational trust and signatory authority that the special project requested of me. The ask fit the narrative perfectly. That's the sophistication. The trap was built to fit exactly where I stood. Marcus has not contacted me since the 6th of April. I do not expect that he will. What I've learned in 4 months of living with this, beyond the specific facts of this case, which are still moving through legal processes I can't detail, is that the corporate environment that made this possible was not unique to my company. The conditions were an organization that didn't separate signatory authority from operational management with any real oversight, a culture of confidential special projects that limited the number of people with full visibility into any given process, a promotion pipeline that created real incentive for loyalty and trust in supervisors, and a person, me, who had built a career on making things happen and had extended that operational confidence to a situation that had been specifically constructed to exploit it. I'm not the only person this has happened to. I know this now from conversations I've had since April with my attorney, with an employment law advocacy organization she connected me to, and with other women whose names I won't use who have been through versions of this in different industries. The mechanism varies. The structure is consistent. Find someone whose trust and professional identity are invested in operational effectiveness. Put their name on something, control their information environment, design the escape before they see the trap, subscribe, because what happened behind closed doors is worse than anyone let on. The documentation is the thing that I think about most in terms of what I would do differently, and when I say differently, I don't mean I would have asked more questions about the vendor or been more suspicious of the IT system. I mean, I would have documented the promotion conversations differently. I have 2 written records of Marcus saying VP of Operational Strategy, with my name attached to it. 2, for an 18-month promise. The 2 I have are thorough and specific, and my attorney has reviewed them, and they are meaningful. But if I'd had 12, if I'd followed up every significant conversation with an email summary, sent to Marcus, noting what was said, and asking for confirmation, I would have a paper record that would be considerably harder to dislodge. This is not advice about suspecting everyone. It's advice about protecting yourself in environments that feel safe, because feeling safe and being safe are not the same thing, and the conditions that made me feel safe were created, at least in part, by the person who was building the mechanism that would use me. Document your conversations. Send follow-up emails. Keep your own records on personal devices separate from company systems. Not because you're in danger, but because the cost of documentation is almost zero, and the cost of not having documentation when you need it is everything. My case is ongoing. My attorney is extraordinary. My name is still on those 7 invoices, and the work of removing it, or accurately contextualizing how it got there, is the work of the next months and possibly years. I am doing that work. I am also, for the first time in 7 years, looking at my professional identity from outside the company that was, for 7 years, the primary container of it. And what I see from outside is that the most valuable thing I built in those 7 years, the trust, the operational track record, the reputation for making things actually happen, was also the exact thing that made me useful to a mechanism designed to take advantage of it. That's worth thinking about. Not as a reason to stop building those things. They are genuinely valuable. They are genuinely mine, and no legal proceeding takes them away, but as a reason to think carefully about the structural conditions in which they exist. Who has visibility? Where oversight sits? How signatory authority is assigned, and what checks exist around it? The questions you don't think to ask when things feel safe. Subscribe, because what happened behind closed doors is worse than anyone let on.